मनोबुद्ध्यहङ्कारचिन्तानि नाहि न च श्रोत्रजिह्वेन च घ्राणनेत्री न च व्योमभूमिन तेजो न वायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न च प्राणसंज्ञो न वै पञ्चवायु न वा सप्तधातु न वा पञ्चकोशा न वा पाणिपादं न चोपस्थपायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न मे द्वेषरागौ लोभमोहौ मदो नैव मे नैव मात्सर्यभाव न धर्मो न चार्थो न कामो न मोक्ष चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न पुण्यं न पापं न सौख्यं न दुःखम् न मन्त्रो न तीर्थं न वेदा न यज्ञा अहं भोजनं नैव भोज्यं न भोक्ता चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं अहं निर्विकल्पो निराकाररूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासङ्गतं नैव मुक्तेर्न मे चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप।
Welcome. I'm so happy to be with you, to be beginning this class, and also to have been introduced into the fundamental subject matter that we're going to be practicing with tonight, with this old, profound, and utterly radical understanding of our own identity. This is, as many of you know, from a chant called Six Stanzas on Liberation, supposedly written by a great sage of Advaita Vedanta, the non-dual form of Vedanta, Shankaracharya. And it essentially is a chant about disconnecting your awareness from everything it identifies with except itself. And it ends with this verse, which my hope is we will experience for ourselves during the process of this class. And the verse goes like this. Aham nirvikalpo nirakara rupo. I am without thought. I am without form. I am all pervasive. I am everywhere, yet I am beyond all senses. I am neither detachment nor liberation nor anything that could be measured. I am consciousness and bliss. I am Shiva. I am Shiva. And that in itself is at the heart of the Shiva Sutras, of the non-dual traditions, and of our practice and our fulfillment, our liberation. I'm tremendously excited about this class and the opportunity it's giving us to soak our minds in the sacred study of non-dual consciousness. Many of you here have studied with me or studied with different teachers, and you're familiar with this tradition. You're familiar with the non-dual teachings in general. And yet, like me, you understand that part of your path as you move forward through a liberated life, because that is indeed what everyone here is committed to, that part of our path is to reinvestigate the teachings of non-duality, to investigate them again and again and again through these texts that carry with them the sacred awareness of the teachers and the lineage who first spoke them, and also of the divine guru, the being, Shiva, who is the source of this lineage and the source of this particular formulation of non-duality. So the splendid path is the journey that starts to unfold the minute we first hear the teaching that our true goal is freedom, the freedom of pure creative awareness. Something in us recognizes this. Something in us recognizes that what we're here for is to live in this world in freedom, in love, in, let's call it, blissfulness. And blissfulness really is the core of this path, the path of Kashmir Shaivism, as one great teacher of this tradition says, is a bliss-saturated path. And the experience of liberation from suffering, even if it's just a moment of liberation, is always the experience of touching into that radical contentment, which the sages call ananda or bliss, which is the heart of your embodied self and of the self which is beyond embodiment. So if the goal is liberation from suffering, the means is to know your own identity as awareness, as pure awareness, and then to recognize that your own pure awareness is not different from the awareness of the great self, Shiva, whose nature is that same awareness and bliss, and whose innate power, Shakti, is constantly manifesting in our outer worlds. And it's, by the way, a path that is saturated with positive energy. When we say that Kashmir Shaivism is a bliss-saturated path, we mean that it's a path that makes us feel good. And one of the ways we know that we're in touch with our deepest truth is that it feels good. It feels right. I'm not saying this because I'm trying to privilege emotion over rationality. I'm saying this because the way we approach our true nature, the way we truly enter into our true nature, is in the end through feeling, through the felt sense of the presence that is us. So the great sage Utpala Deva wrote, and I like to quote this at the beginning of every one of the Shaivism classes that I teach. He said, "This is the path of Shiva, where poison becomes nectar and worldly life becomes the abode of liberation." I'm not sure why I'm crying, but that is part of the way that I experience truth, is when a particular spoken truth brings up tears, it's usually a sign that it's touched my heart, hit my heart. And this is apparently what's happening now. So let's go over some of the housekeeping details before we enter into our first chant and meditation. Deb has sent you some mailings with the basic details of the class, but here are a few reminders. First, if you haven't studied Kashmir Shaivism before, or if you want a refresher on the metaphysics, the lineage, and the culture of non-dual Shaivism, I suggest that you download the course Cliff Notes, which are called Notes on Tantra. They're on the course page. And you also might want to download our bonus feature for this week, which is an audio recording of a talk I gave 2 years ago in our class on the Recognition Sutras, which describes the 36 tattvas, the levels of manifestation through which the physical world arises inside of the infinitely subtle consciousness. This is very, very helpful, because one of the great questions that we have when we start approaching the teaching, consciousness is everything, which is essentially what we're doing in this class, we're unpacking the understanding of what it means to say that consciousness is everything, that everything is made of awareness. It can be very hard to understand how awareness, which is so subtle, could possibly be inside the density and the thickness of the material world. So understanding the tattvas, or at least becoming intellectually familiar with the tattvas, actually helps a lot in making sense of that. So the second reminder I want to give you is that the more practice you can fit in during the time the course is happening, the deeper the material will sink in and the more it'll impact you. In this tradition, and in all the Indian traditions, there's an understanding about how we approach teachings of the truth, teachings that claim to tune us into the heart of the universe. We begin by listening to them. This is a process. In Sanskrit, the word is shravana, which means hearing. You hear it, you listen to it. And one of the clues that my teacher gave me about how to listen was this. When you're hearing the teaching, just hear it. Don't argue with it. Don't question it. If questions come up, for sure write them down, because later on you'll want to explore them. But allow the teachings to just come in, to be taken in. The second part of the hearing and receiving process is called manana. And this is the process in which you turn the teachings over in your mind. you discuss them, you think about them, you contemplate them, you hold them up to your experience, you consider all the things that you don't agree with about them, maybe you research different ways of approaching the teachings, and then finally, you meditate. You actually hold the teachings in consciousness and in a meditative way and allow them to enter you in a manner that takes them, allows them to move past the intellect, past the rational mind, and begin to infuse themselves into your pure awareness. And when you do this, when you meditate on teachings like this, one of the things that they will do for you is that they will begin to unpick the structures of false understanding, the structures of materialism, the structures that you've inculcated through family conditioning, through social conditioning, through religious conditioning, and to, in a sense, turn your consciousness into a clean slate in which, through which, within which, you can begin to investigate the real nature of your own awareness. So meditation is really important, and you'll be getting targeted, tailored meditation instructions every week. I recommend, however, that if you already have a regular meditation practice, that you continue with your practice. Don't feel like you have to superimpose something else on it, but add the contemplative practices and inquiry that we'll be sending you each week. And you'll be able to do this because I'm going to give them to you in a bite-sized form. And I especially recommend, and many of you know how important this is, that you work with the open-eyed walking around practice, as we call it, in which you take a sutra or a commentary on the sutra or an understanding about your own reality, and you hold on to it through the day. You repeat it to yourself from time to time. You come back to it. You hold it in your mind and notice how living with this teaching impacts the way you relate and react to others. So that's the second very significant aspect of taking the class. Practice meditation. Use the teachings as part of the daily screen through which you look at the world. And the other piece that's really helpful is discussion. So many of you will like to work with a discussion partner. Some of you have partners that you like to work with, and both for helping you clarify your understanding and also because having a study partner just really enhances the fun of being in a class like this. The experience that you share with another person becomes much more real to you. If you're interested in having a partner, let Deb know. She'll find you someone who's hopefully in your time zone or close to it. And also, she asked me to tell you that if you have a gender preference and if there's a particular level of experience that you're coming from, let her know those things also, and she'll try to meet your needs, find you a partner who really works. And finally, do communicate on the listserv. We now have a new listserv, which is easier to access and somewhat more intuitive than the last one. And again, as those of you who've been part of this community know, the listserv is a place where we ask questions, where we share insights, where we communicate, and also where we cultivate the sense of community, which is one of the really great things about the way we work together here. You know, we are in so many different places. There are 5 continents represented in this course, many, many time zones, lots of different sets of life experience. But as we start to communicate with each other in the light of the Shiva Sutras, our differences begin to become ways that we enhance our capacity to be intimate, both with one another and with the world itself. Because the listserv not only helps us inspire each other, It also helps us realize where our concepts and judgments get triggered and learn how to work with them. Community is indispensable to the process of waking up. And one of my intentions in teaching in this way is really to allow community to form and to allow each one of you to be supported to the extent that you want to be supported by the community. So let's continue by bringing our attention to each other and to the shared consciousness that is present in this Sangam space. Some of you are awake in the middle of the night to listen live. Many of you are listening to the call a few days after the live broadcast. And of course, the miracle of this Sangam, and I actually do consider it a miracle, is that the stream of transmission that runs through this class is present whether you're listening live or tuning in later, because the community lives in consciousness. It lives in the virtual space we create together. Now imagine the presence of this group of souls. There are about 150 people in this class. Some of you are on the call. Some of you are on the live stream, on the webinar. Some of you are thinking about it and will be tuning in tomorrow. Could imagine the presence of all of these beings, like a web of living awareness that spans the globe, and feel that we form a circle. You might imagine the circle as a circle of light, the light of the souls of each one of us. And now imagine that you light a candle representing that same pure light of awareness. Let's say you're lighting the candle to represent your own awareness, which you're bringing into the circle. And as you kindle the candle, imagine yourself placing it in the center of the circle. Now we'll take a deep inhalation together, breathing in the power and the blessing that we create together when we join our awareness. And then as we let the breath out, we offer our attention and our blessing into the circle. And so it is. We are connected. And we'll invoke the grace that removes obstacles by chanting to Ganesha. Hopefully you have your chanting sheets in front of you. Then we'll chant the Mahamrityunjaya mantras 3 times. Many of you here in this circle have been chanting the Mahamrityunjaya mantras during our last telecourse. Those of you who don't know them, listen for the first couple of times, and then I promise you by next week you'll be very familiar with them. And finally, we'll chant the mantras to Shiva as the Supreme Guru, Dakshinamurti. And these mantras are new to many of you. They're the mantras of the course, the basic identifying mantras of the course. And then to the Supreme Goddess, who is Shiva's power of bliss, who is the feminine form of Supreme Consciousness, and who is the liberating power that we invoke as we plunge into the Shiva Sutras. So in the first chant, we'll begin with Ganesha invocation, Om Ganganapataye Namaha. And then we'll do what's called a Dhyana Shloka, which invokes Ganesha as the Lord with the huge body and the crooked trunk, who shines like billions of suns, asking that he remove all obstacles from our practice. And then we'll continue into the Mahamrityunjaya mantra. We'll chant each of these mantras 3 times. Om Gangam Ganapataye Namaha. Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha. Niravignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada. Once again. Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha. Niravignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada. Again. Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha. Niravignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada. And the Mahamrityunjaya mantras. Aum Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanam Mrityormukshiyamamritat. And again. Aum Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanam Mrityormukshiyamamritat. And again. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanam Mrityormukshiyamamritat. Om. And finally, the mantras to Shiva as the Supreme Guru. The tune is a familiar tune to those of you who chant Sanskrit mantras a lot, but you might like to listen to me the first time so that you can kind of get it. Gurave sarvalokanam visaje bhavaroginam nidaye sarvavidyanam dakshinamurtaye namaha. Gurave sarvalokanam Vishaje bhavaroginam nidaye sarva vidyanam dakshina murtaye namaha. I bow to the guru of all worlds, to the physician who cures all worldly ills, to the ocean of all wisdom, to dakshina murti Shiva, the Lord who initiates us into the highest wisdom. And one more time. Gurave sarva lokanam Visaje bhavaroginam nidhaye sarvavidyanam dakshina murtaye namaha. And finally, to the Supreme Goddess. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatra sadike sharanye trayambake gauri narayani namostute. And two more times. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatra sadike sharanye trayambake gauri narayani namostute. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatra sadike sharanye trayambakam gauri narayani namostute. I take refuge in she who is the auspiciousness of all that is auspicious, who is always united with Shiva, to Gauri, the three-eyed shining one, to Narayani, I bow. And now find your posture, taking a moment to settle yourself with full awareness of taking the support of your seat. If you're driving or walking, you actually can do this practice, driving or walking. Just don't close your eyes. If you're sitting, please do close your eyes. And just begin by becoming aware of your body in the space. Just take a moment to scan your body from the crown down through the face, noticing any parts of the face that are tight or squinched, and just asking them to soften. become aware of your neck and your shoulders and have the thought soften. And then let your attention roam through the torso, softening the belly, allowing the breath to deepen, noticing whether your buttocks are clenched as you hold yourself upright or whether your lower back is feeling a little bit scrunched or squished, and ask them to soften. Soften your thighs and your calves. Release any holding in your feet. And bring your attention to the arms and the hands and the fingers. And really have the feeling of letting all of this go. Letting it all release, soften. Now become aware of the sounds, my voice, but also the ambient sounds around you. Feel also the embodied presence that you experience as you sit, the weight of your body, the slight tickle of the air against your face, the light touch of your clothes against your skin. Be aware of the breath. And without trying to change the breath or deepen the breath, just notice the touch of the breath. Perhaps feeling it first, moving through the nostrils, and then beginning to notice the parts of your body that move with the breath. And as you relax into the breath, as you release into the breath, notice how it will naturally become deeper. And of course, along with this process of bringing attention to sensations and the sounds, you may also have become aware of the rising and falling of thoughts, which for most of us is fairly constant. So see if you can let your attention cycle from sound to sensation to thought. Centering on the breath, you get lost in thought. And now ask yourself the question, what is it that's aware that I'm sitting? What is it that's aware that there's breath? What is it that's aware of thinking? Ask the question. Don't wait for an answer to arise. Ask the question and see if your awareness will reveal itself in answer to the question. What is it that knows I'm sitting? What is it that knows that breath is happening? What is that? That space, that sense of presence that arises in the seconds after you've asked the question, is the presence of your awareness. See if you can notice it. See if you can allow the sounds, the thoughts, the sensations to rise and fall and to start to be present to that vibrant field that we call knowingness or awareness. That vibrant, dynamic, and yet paradoxically unchanging presence, that aware presence, that conscious knowingness, is our subject, is the subject, is the you, the me, that we've been searching for our entire life, and which, in the world's greatest paradox, is ever-present as the knower and the holder of your experience. As you ask the question, what is it that knows? I'm breathing. What is it that knows? I'm thinking. You're actually allowing awareness to become aware of itself. And when we describe this process, we often call it the process of turning backwards, of turning attention back on itself. But the truth is, awareness doesn't have to go anywhere to be aware of itself. We just have to be willing to look for it, or rather to allow it to look at itself in the midst of the thoughts, the breathing process, the rising and falling of sensation. All of it is possible only because of awareness. And see if you can notice the quality of this field of awareness. You'll come out of it. You'll lose touch with it. You'll begin to think. You'll begin to ask yourself, is this awareness, or how do I do this? Or you'll get lost in a distraction or a sensation. But as you gently bring awareness back to itself, as you gently surrender into awareness, you may start to notice that it is the ground of your experience, and that it has a particular flavor about it. Awareness is still in the sense that it's always present. And if you've done this practice before, you know that when you become aware of awareness, or rather when awareness becomes aware of itself through you, it always feels the same. It's not actually different. That's its stillness. And yet it also scintillates. It's not a dead stillness. There's an alive, vibrant quality to awareness. And when we have the experience of thoughts bubbling inside, the bubble within thought and the bubble that gives rise to thought are the dynamism of awareness. So just keep asking, what is aware of my experience? And relaxing into what arises. Just notice how you're hearing my voice, and it's creating ripples in that awareness. Notice that awareness doesn't remain empty. It constantly fills itself up with thoughts and perceptions. And that tendency to take the shape of thought, to take the shape of perception, to believe, to be, let's say, seduced, to identify with thought and perception, is what the Shiva Sutras call the binding quality in awareness. So there is this experience of awareness as a kind of field, like the screen on which all of experience is playing. There's a quality of isness about it. It's contentless. But within that contentless field, endless creations are arising. And within that contentless field, there is also something that has no content, but which is incredibly important because it is what gives direction to your life. There is this intentionality, this desiring, this dynamic quality of uprise that's always present in awareness. And in the teachings of the tradition, it's said that the stillness, the ground quality of awareness, is given the name prakasha, which means light, which means self-illuminating radiance. So the field of the mind is light in the sense that it has the quality of making everything knowable. Awareness makes objects and thoughts, your body and the so-called outside world, it makes it all knowable. It illumines it. That's why it's called prakasha, or light. And the other quality inside that field, the quality of creative dynamism, the quality that makes stuff arise within the ground, is called vimarsha, which means experienceableness. Vimarsha is this quality in consciousness that creates experience and allows experience to be experienced. And we'll be talking a lot about that as we go on. Prakasha, the light, the stillness quality in consciousness, is what the tradition calls Shiva. Shiva meaning that which lies beneath. And the vimarsha quality, the experiencing quality within consciousness, the ability that this ground has to create within itself, is called shakti. Shakti meaning power, meaning dynamism. And these two aspects of your consciousness, light and creative capacity to know and experience, are the source of everything in your life and ultimately in the cosmos, the source of everything that is experienced. We're going to keep coming back to meditation on awareness in several different ways throughout the course of this class. Tonight especially, we are grounding ourselves in meditation on awareness. And there are two reasons why I want to emphasize this. One is that our sutra for tonight, Chaitanyam Atma, which means supremely creative and free consciousness, is the self, is the true nature of everything. That's the sutra that we're working with tonight. And the place we're going to find access to the heart of what the sutra is talking about is inside our own awareness. So the more we can come back to it, the more familiar we can become with it, the bigger the chance that awareness will start to reveal itself to us as what it really is. One of the very helpful instructions that some of the non-dual traditions give us about meditating on awareness is that we shouldn't expect to be able to completely stabilize our experience of it. Instead, we touch it for 2 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds at a time, and then we just keep coming back to it. 10 seconds of attention to awareness, and then a thought arises, or a sound catches our attention, and then we come back again for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, to noticing that ground of knowing that's behind and within everything that we see and experience. We just keep returning to it. And as I said, I'll give you several protocols for working with it. And you'll find that some of them are really powerful for you, some of them less so. But every one of them will increase your sense of familiarity with your deep self. Awareness is irreducible. It's dynamic and yet unchanging. And that paradox, that there is this unchanging stillness which is irreducible and yet which is characterized by endless creative activity, that this irreducible awareness is the heart of you, and that it's also the heart of the universe. This is the core of Kashmir Shaivism. And it's also a method that's been at the heart of virtually all the non-dual paths. Because what the experience of non-duality really is the experience of recognizing this knowingness first as that which makes it possible for you to experience your life and both your inner and your outer life, and eventually as that which makes everything. That which creates and sustains everything. So the Shiva Sutras, the primary text of Kashmir Shaivism, explains this not in a philosophical way, because the Shiva Sutras is a text of yoga. It's really a text about the methods for moving along the inner path of self-realization. But it also rests on some basic philosophical and metaphysical assumptions, which will be part of our study. And one of the main ones, one of the most important aspects of this tradition, is that it's theistic. In other words, Kashmir Shaivism and the Shiva Sutras places a supreme being at the center of reality, and then asks us to realize that our real self is that supreme being. You are Shiva, you are Shakti, you are that. Basic, very basic mantra of the Eastern non-dual traditions. You are the self. And this is the most transformative insight imaginable. It has to be experienced, because as an intellectual proposition, it doesn't, at least not to me, doesn't make all that much sense. How can something as infinitely subtle as awareness be the intrinsic essence of this table, or of this computer, or of my often thoughtful mind? And how can that awareness, which in my experience most of the time is confined to this body and to what seems like an extremely personal and subjective form of perception, how can this personal awareness of mine be God, be Shiva? So this is really what the text wants us to understand, but which, in another one of those paradoxes, cannot really be understood fully just by our intellectual effort or just by our practice. Because the ultimate experience of our identity with Supreme Awareness is always a gift of grace. Again, this is another one of the fundamental ideas of Shaivism. In an absolutely non-dual universe where there's just one great subjective awareness that is manifesting all these different layers of reality within itself. In such a universe, where there's only one thing expressing itself as all that is, the only way to know the truth about the universe is to have it revealed to you by the one who is manifesting as the universe. And this revelation is what in the tradition we call grace. This basic feeling of being limited and separate from the whole is something that awareness imposes on itself by creating structures that limit it, that contract it, simply in order to allow the oneness to experience itself as many. And to penetrate through that illusion of manyness, the one has to take off its mask. The experience of having reality mask from us, of not being able to see into the heart of ourselves, is called in the tradition ignorance or avidya. And it's said that there are two types of ignorance. First of all, there's intellectual ignorance. In other words, we can't see the truth because nobody's ever told us about it. You know, all we've learned in school is about the different genuses and species and planets and laws of the physical universe, the psychological truths, etc., etc. We haven't learned about the underlying reality. So these texts are here to cure our intellectual ignorance by giving us the perspective of Shiva, the drishti, the viewpoint, the vision of the universe that Shiva, that absolute awareness holds, which is to say the vision of oneness, the vision of sacred non-duality. The second type of ignorance, which is called innate ignorance, is what I've just talked about. That is to say, it's the veil that reality has placed over our vision in order to allow itself to experience limitation and smallness. Why it does this is a matter of some speculation, but what I believe, and which what most of the sages say, is that consciousness, Shiva, Shiva Shakti, the great self, veils itself in order to have the experience of being in relationship with many, many different forms of itself. And the problem is, of course, that in that process, the veil becomes so thick that it's almost impossible to see through it. And thus we have a world of profound polarization and profound suffering. So the work we do to lose our intellectual ignorance, the reading and the study and the practice that we do to begin to tease out awareness from underneath its coverings is our part in this process of freeing ourselves from the veil. But the veil will only come off when awareness decides to take it off itself. And because human awareness is incredibly creative, one of the truths that the sages have realized over the many, many centuries in which human beings have been practicing to know the truth is that reality can be, that reality is responsive to affection. You know, just as you and I are responsive to affection, just as you and I expand when we're given loving attention. Why is this? Why do we expand when we're given loving attention? It's because the nature of consciousness is to experience love through attention. So when we give attention to pure awareness, when we give attention to consciousness, the attention that we give that is received and then comes back to us in the form of expansions in our awareness, in the form of blissful feelings, in the form of the evolution of our capacity to know awareness. So, in a certain sense, our practice of tuning into awareness is actually, we could call it a way of giving attention to Shiva as well as a way of nourishing ourselves. And it's that attention, that self-nourishment, which will eventually bring forth the full experience of what we really are. The sages of the Shiva Sutras, the sage of the Shiva Sutras, who we are told in the text is Shiva himself, wants us to accept these two truths. One, that there is a transcendent supreme being who's the source of the cosmos, and two, that this supreme being is directly present as our awareness. And then two more. Because of the structures we hold in the mind, we're not able to perceive this supreme being as ourselves. And fourth, that through this empowered teaching, through practice and through grace, this hidden truth becomes available. And these truths are encoded in the Shiva Sutras, especially in the first two sutras, which go like this. Chaitanyam Atma, awareness filled with freedom and power, is the self. It is your true self, and it's also the self of the universe. Chaitanyam Atma, awareness filled with freedom and power, is the real self, the self in you and the self of the universe. And the second sutra points to the reason we don't see this, and it goes, Jnanam Bandha. Jnanam meaning knowledge, in this case conceptual knowledge, Bandha, which means binding, constricting, contracting. So conceptual knowledge is binding. It contracts awareness by imposing ideas and structures on what is actually unbounded and flowing. So any structure that appears in your consciousness, and ultimately that includes these teachings, you know, these teachings are often compared to the thorn that you use to take a splinter out of your foot. You know, you have a splinter in your foot, you need an instrument to take the splinter out, so you use a thorn or a needle. Once the splinter is out, you stop poking yourself with the needle because it's no longer useful, so you throw the needle away. And in the same way, we use structures, we use ideas, we use teachings to help us know the truth. But once we are in that full experience of awareness, we don't need the teachings anymore. We discard them, because otherwise, even a teaching of truth like Chaitanyam Atma can become a structure that keeps you from being fully immersed in the thing it's pointing to. So, awareness is the truth. Awareness is reality. Awareness is the goal. Awareness is where we start, and awareness is where we finish. The claim of the Shiva Sutras is that they arise precisely out of Shiva's act of self-reflective awareness. So the Shiva Sutras is a text that claims to be direct transmission from God, basically, mind to mind, heart to heart, not thought up by any human being. And there's a story about it, which we could call it the origin myth of the Shiva Sutras. It goes like this, and we tell these stories because in all the great non-dual lineages, one of the ways that we bring forth the original wisdom is to retell the story of how it all came down. So, here's the story. In the 8th century AD, in the region of the Himalayas, near what used to be and perhaps still is the most beautiful place in India, the mountains outside Srinagar in Kashmir. That part of the world where India segues into Nepal and then into Tibet is the cradle of some of the most sublime non-dual teachings ever, including Yogacara Buddhism, the school that's probably the most influential in non-dual Tibetan Buddhism, which teaches, you know, Yogacara Buddhism teaches that everything is made of mind stuff, that all phenomena arise in one great mind. And that teaching is very much influenced by the teaching of Kashmir Shaivism. But there is a difference, because in Buddhism, one of the main understandings is that there is no self. That is, that this mind, this consciousness out of which everything arises, has no selfness to it. That the phenomena are in fact empty of any meaning, arising and subsiding through what we might call chemical interactions, which Buddhism calls dependent origination. And just as, you know, we arise through the interaction of our parents' sperm and ovum and grow through the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, the Buddhists saw that it's also very possible that life arises and evolves simply because of interactions between one form of life and another. And this teaching, then as now, is a teaching held by many very smart people. We had in this neighborhood the Buddhist understanding about reality, which was non-dual, but radically selfless, non-theistic, leaving no room for any sort of supreme self. Not feeling that there was any supreme self, any God idea needed to explain the universe. And on the other hand, you had dualistic Hinduism, where there is a very strong sense of God, of a supreme being, you know, and a strong intention to worship. And yet at the same time, a very dualistic viewpoint, in other words, the idea that there's a big, powerful, transcendent God up here, and that everything, so to speak, down here is small and limited. You know, it's kind of like there's God, big God and small humans, small, mortal, and dumb. So between these the non-theistic no-self view of the local Buddhists and the dualistic view of the local Hindus, there was no real room for this recognition, the recognition at the heart of non-dual Shaivism. So at this moment of crisis, the sage Vasugupta had a dream. And Vasugupta was a very deep practitioner, and he was a devotee of Shiva. So in the dream, Shiva said to him, go to this mountain called Mahadev Giri, which is a couple of miles outside what is now downtown Srinagar, and turn over a rock, and there you'll find a collection of sutras that explain the inner teaching, the eternal secret, the secret of the identity of the individual soul and the great soul. So Vasugupta went to the mountain, turned over the rock, and found the 77 sutras of the Shiva sutras. So the story at the origin of this text, then, is a story of revelation. Very much like Moses at the burning bush receiving the Ten Commandments, and, you know, Muhammad being carried to heaven to receive the Quran. The great religions, the great spiritual communities of the world almost always are kindled out of a revelation by a progenitor. And Kashmir Shaivism is no different. Hopefully, Kashmir Shaivism did not and will not devolve into one of the dogmatic religions. But the revelation always maintains truth. It always holds truth. The basic teaching of the Shiva Sutras was that one great subject, one great I, is at the heart of everything. And that our entire purpose in life is to recognize this. So, in our first class, as we have been doing, we're going to continue to meditate on this awareness that the Shiva Sutras tell us is Shiva himself. Find yourself a posture. Feel the softening of your body. begin to be present to the felt sense of your body on the seat, to the experience of the breath flowing in and flowing out, to the experience of sound, and become present to what it is that makes this possible. And I'm going to give you a slightly different way to become aware of awareness. I'm going to ask you to do something quite radical. I'm going to ask you to let go of your sense of being the person you normally identify with. Let go of who you think you are. Let go of your name. Let go of your history. Let go of what you have to do later. Let go of everything you know about yourself through thought, memory, ideas, intentions. Imagine that as you let go of anything that defines you, you step through a kind of doorway that leads out of your conceptual mind and into the experience of pure beingness, of pure isness. Are you aware? What is the experience of being aware? Let yourself center in that experience of being aware. Now with your eyes closed, ask yourself, is this awareness inside my body and brain? Or are my body and brain inside awareness? Just ask the question. Now, if you have received the insight that your body and brain are being experienced inside awareness, station yourself 5 feet in front of your body. Is awareness there, 5 feet in front of your body? As awareness, can you regard your own body? Can you be present to your body as awareness from this place, 5 feet in front of where you're sitting? Can you find yourself behind your body, 5 feet behind your body, and sense yourself present as awareness? Can you be aware of your body from behind? Can you be aware of your body from all sides? Can awareness regard your body from all sides? And as you're doing this practice, which I know involves consciousness of the body, see if you can remove your sense that awareness is regarding a body, and just for a moment, let awareness settle into itself. Let awareness reveal itself as empty, knowing spaciousness. Let yourself be awareness. Notice how that sound appears inside awareness, how my voice appears inside awareness, how the sensations in the body appear inside awareness. And yet awareness is not them. Awareness is not the sound. It's away from the sound. Awareness is not the sensations, it's away from the sensations. And as you start to detach awareness from what it is aware of, as you start to be able to be present to awareness, independent of the objects of awareness, you have moved into the first phase of the movement of what is called self-realization. There are actually several movements in this process, and the first one is to begin to be present to awareness and also to detach your capacity for being aware from all the things that awareness normally holds within itself. So this process that we've been doing throughout the class of being aware of sounds, sensations, thoughts, then aware of awareness is actually one of the ways in which we begin to discover awareness as something that is really completely untouched by any of the objects or phenomena that arise inside it. And this is part of what begins to make a non-dual practitioner become free of being tossed around by thoughts and emotions and even outside circumstances. When I first began practicing with this teaching, I usually would get inspired to use it when I was feeling bad. And you may have this experience too. You know, when I was feeling good, when I was feeling blissful, when I was engaged or in a creative project or a great conversation, it wouldn't even occur to me to try and separate experience from awareness. But when I was depressed or disappointed or in a bad mood, there was a lot of incentive to do this kind of self-inquiry. So I'd ask myself, what is aware that I'm having this feeling? And refocus on the felt experience of awareing that would often arise. And what I found was that, and also you may have found this too, is that if I could focus on awareness of the feeling rather than on the feeling, that the charge in the feeling, the intense energy in the feeling would start to morph and dissolve into awareness. And so awareness you know, actually asking myself this inquiry question, what knows I'm feeling bad, or what knows my stomach hurts, this would often help dispel the discomfort. But at the time, even though I knew how to use this, you know, this technique as a way of helping myself feel better, and found it very, very helpful and useful in that way, I could not put together this experience of awareness with the full truth that my guru was teaching. In other words, he would say your consciousness is identical with Shiva's consciousness. I might think, if you say so, but I couldn't reconcile my feeling of being Sally with this teaching. Little by little, it was moments of grace that started to shift it. You know, I would be gazing out the window or looking around the room, and for a moment, that sense of being a limited observer whose awareness was inside the head would dissolve or would swell up and make it obvious that the room I was looking at or the passing objects out the car window were actually a part of my awareness, were being contained in my awareness. They would be complete in their individuality, but it would also be clear that they were arising inside me, arising inside my consciousness. And this wasn't an intellectual construct, but it was an actual felt experience. And this is something that happens to us as we start to move into what we could call the second phase of this recognition, that as we become able at will to become aware of awareness, we also begin to have moments, glimpses of recognizing the deeper truth about awareness, which is that your entire experience of life is happening inside your awareness, but there actually is no such thing as an outside world, because nothing can be experienced outside of awareness. So this is what we could call phase two of the movement of consciousness towards true self-recognition. We start to find it inside. We become more conscious of it inside. We begin to be interested in it. We begin to examine it. We begin to explore it. We begin to station ourselves in it. We begin to have moments when we recognize, oh, I am awareness. Awareness and not the body is what I am. And this movement to identifying with awareness matures as we recognize that awareness is not local. It's not inside us. It's everywhere. Awareness is aware of the body, even while we're experiencing ourselves as being inside the body. But as soon as we start to recognize that awareness is aware of the body, we can also start to recognize that awareness is not confined to the body. And the more we can cook in or expand in this recognition, the more we're opening ourselves to what is called in Shaivism the experience of Atma Samavesha, that is, the experience of sameness with the self, which means the experience of actually being able to see whatever you're experiencing as arising inside yourself. That's one of the walking around exercises we're going to be doing this week, walking through the world with the intention to recognize that whatever is happening within yourself. And as you start to practice with this, you start to be able to accept yourself and everyone else in a much more empathic and, for want of a better word, relaxed way. You're able, for moments, days, weeks, and eventually throughout your whole life, you begin to be able to accept yourself unconditionally. Because your fundamental identification is with this awareness, which can never not accept you. This awareness which has this innate quality of acceptance, of contentment, of love, of non-judgmental attention. Meditation on awareness is not emotion. It's actually the secret to self-love, as it is the secret to unconditionally loving others. Until we begin to recognize this awareness, we're always going to be comparing ourselves and our lives to some kind of conceptual ideal, and we'll always come up short. You know, we call this tension or low self-esteem or existential shame or unworthiness. But it really is just the result of not understanding what we are. Chaitanyam Atma, Jnanam Bandha. Supremely free awareness is the true nature of the universe, the self. Conceptual knowledge binds and constricts awareness such that it fails to recognize itself, and, now this is commentary, it identifies with objects in awareness. Chaitanyam Atma, pure awareness, filled with creativity, is the self of all. And I want to now spend a few minutes giving you some pointing out instructions to help us more deeply segue into this experience. Let's start with the word Atma, which we usually translate as self. Atma actually has several different meanings. It means, in our ordinary parlance, our individual self, sense of being and knowingness, of being and knowing. But basically, what Atma means is the pure sense of being, the feeling of existence, which is the irreducible experience of being alive. In other words, no matter who you are or what state you're in, you exist, and you know you exist. There's this sense of being, of isness, that we experience all through our lives. And this sense of being is self-aware, it's conscious. It's been there since you were an infant, even though as an infant you identified yourself probably with the body of your mother. But you had this sense of existing. And it was, this sense of existing was there when you began to differentiate from your mother, when you were 2 or 3, when you were 10. It's there now, and it'll be there when you're dying. And as we understand, even after you're dying, because it's the aspect of you and everything else that doesn't change, die, or disappear. Now, this is the fundamental insight of non-dual spirituality. It's non-dual spirituality 101. And this is what we meditate for. As we've been saying throughout this class, we do the experiment that these sages did of going deep in meditation, letting the mind sink backwards through the thoughts, through the images, through all the structures that we start to be aware of when the mind turns inside. And eventually, as you allow yourself to simply take rest in meditation, as your mind sinks backward into its own essence, the thoughts dissolve into the stuff they're made of. And what you discover is that your thoughts are made of this suchness, this aware suchness, which is awareness itself. So being awareness, this simple feeling of existence, is the essence of your inner world. It's the background of your thinking. It's the background of your dream states. It's even the background of deep dreamless sleep, which the sages tell us we know is true, because when you wake up from dreamless sleep, you know you are asleep. I have a friend, a guy named Robert, who has seizures, and during a seizure and immediately following it, he completely loses his sense of personal self. But he tells me he still knows he exists. There's still awareness. There's still a part of him that's completely awake to himself. This is Atman. This is the self. This is presence. This is the irreducible sense of being. So in the text, when it says Chaitanyam Atma, one of the meanings is yourself, your sense of being, is Chaitanyam. It's awareness. But the word Chaitanya cannot really be translated by the English word awareness, because Chaitanya includes the meaning of total creativity and freedom. Chaitanya is free. Chaitanya cannot be diminished or constricted. It's free. Many people who consider themselves non-dualists but are not theistic call this awareness, this sense of presence, emptiness. They call it void. They call it shunya, because it's empty of content. The Shaivite sages, including my guru, who are often lovers of particular deity forms, even though they also understood and understand that all forms dissolve into the ultimate ground, which is Chaitanya Atman, which is the awareness that's the true nature of the universe. But they called that ground by the name of their deity. They called it Shiva, or they called it Kali. And yet they were never in any doubt that Chaitanya Atma is beyond all forms, even though it is filled with the power and the bliss and the splendor of these forms. Chaitanya Atma always refers to awareness without an object. Awareness that is free of all objects and which yet has the power to manifest any object within itself. It's objectless, but it's the origin of all phenomena. And this is a really, really big idea, and it's one that in the modern West, we're mostly not aware of, right? We're mostly not able to understand, because we don't have the conceptual framework that lets us grok that everything, the essence of everything, is awareness. We live in a science-based culture, which is founded on the belief that, what we call the real world is the world of matter. And we believe that something called the Big Bang gave rise to matter, which evolved into a universe, which eventually produced bodies, and that the bodies produced brains, and then in the brain, awareness developed. And in this paradigm, reality is a physical world, and consciousness is a later phenomenon. So that's why in many branches of science, in consciousness studies particularly, the understanding of what consciousness is called the hard problem, because nobody can figure out how consciousness evolves out of rocks and dust and the human body. In fact, it's hard if you believe that matter is primary to understand where consciousness comes from. But of course, because the sages understood that matter does not come first, that consciousness comes first, which they knew from their inner investigations, they also understood something that's very subtle, which is that the brain is not aware, the body is not aware, the mind is not aware. This is really important. The brain is not aware, the body is not aware, the mind is not aware. Awareness is aware. Only awareness is aware. When awareness moves as body, the body lives. But it's not the body that's ever aware. It's hard for us to understand what it, the mind, but it's the very heart of the non-dual perspective. Awareness appears to occupy different bodies. It appears to interact in physical time and space. But it's never confined to the body, and it can never be known by the mind. So the body, as we really experience it, is actually a series of sensations and perceptions that we conceptualize through the structures of the mind and nervous system. And the mind, when you investigate it in meditation, turns out to be a constantly dissolving series of arisings, which we call thoughts or perceptions or images, which come up for a little while and then dissolve back into their source, which is always awareness. What they discovered is that the mind can't touch awareness or even discern it, because when the mind comes up against awareness, it dissolves. When the intellect tries to understand awareness, it flounders around for a while and then dissolves. And awareness arises to be aware of itself. The Upanishads speak of the self as the light whose shining causes everything else to shine. You know, like the sun, which illumines the solar system and also itself, the sun doesn't have to turn itself around. It doesn't have to turn inside to illuminate itself. Just by being itself, it illuminates itself as well as everything else. Awareness, just by being itself, illuminates all experience. But of course, the sun isn't really like awareness, because the sun will die someday. And awareness doesn't ever disappear, and it doesn't ever die. The body appears within awareness, just as your dining room table does. But it's our concepts that carves this one awareness up into inside my body and outside my body. The body can't know awareness. The thinking part of the mind can't know awareness, because it's an instrument of awareness and has no independent existence. The body appears and disappears according to whether we're awake or asleep. But awareness never disappears. It's the only thing that never disappears. One of my favorite non-dual teachers says, awareness is knowing of its own being, is imperturbable, indestructible, indivisible, immutable, immortal, and invulnerable. It cannot be touched, but all knowledge and experience is touched by us, by it. It is the only form of knowing, and this is really important, that does not involve a separation of knowing subject and object that is known. Awareness is always the subject. It is never an object. And yet it can be known, but only by itself. In relationship to all objects, we could say that awareness is the ultimate subject. But its knowledge of its own being transcends the duality of subject and object. When you touch your own awareness, you don't do it with the mind. Even though we can ask ourselves these inquiry questions like, what is it that's aware? Or invite ourselves to be aware of awareness. The fact is, you can't think your way into awareness. The mind is stumped by that question. What knows I'm thinking? Who am I without words? The mind has to retire because it can't hold awareness. Intellect can understand it, but intellect too is powerless to penetrate it. To notice awareness, you have to surrender your ideas and efforts and actually be awareness. To know awareness, to know the self, to experience the truth of Chaitanya Atman, you have to surrender your ideas and efforts to know it, and let yourself be it. So, close your eyes again, and look into your own mind. And we're going to do a practice for beginning to, in a slightly different way, tease out awareness from thought. And we're going to meditate on awareness as the knowing aspect of the mind, as the knowing aspect of the self. So be present to your inner world. Notice what's actually going on when you close your eyes and pay attention to your closed-eyed experience. Of course, you'll be aware of what's going on in the body. Or at least of some of the sensations that come up when you turn your attention inside. You'll also be aware of thoughts of thinking. And this is where the discernment comes in. See if you can notice the way thoughts come up. See if you can notice the way movements arise in your inner world. And what I'm going to suggest is that as thoughts arise, as images arise, there's also this part of you which is able to discern the arising of thoughts. Can you be present to the thoughts, to the arising of thoughts, and also to that which is aware of thoughts? Can you hold those two together? Can you notice thinking? And also be aware of what knows you're thinking. What happens to the thoughts? Take a deep breath in, exhale. Another deep breath and exhale. And once again, use your mind to ask yourself, what is that that is present to the experience of being here at this moment? And as this presence arises, see if you can rest in it for 10 seconds. Relax, release. Take another deep breath. Let your mind be as it is. Let your mind do whatever it does. Relax into letting your mind do whatever it does. And now for another few seconds, 15 seconds this time, become aware of that which is present to your thinking. Become aware of awareness. Relax your tension. Come back to the breath. I want to ask you, invite you, challenge you, beg you, actually, to stay with this practice tonight. I know that some of you have obligations and people in the house, and you'll be having conversations going about your day. But see if you can keep taking these moments to become aware of awareness, to notice what it is that is the background of your experience, to notice how this awareness that allows you to experience everything in your life is ever present. It's always there. And notice how constantly giving rise to impulses, to images, to thoughts, that they just come up. That the perceptions that you're present to when you interact with the world are also basically just arising inside this field that contains and permeates and enlivens your experience. See if you can make awareness the focus of your attention. Attention is the active dynamic aspect of awareness. So what you're really doing is inviting awareness to be aware of itself. And just notice what happens as you do this, as you practice this. It'll be frustrating sometimes. You won't always feel that you get it. But just keep letting awareness be aware of itself over and over again. This is how Chaitanyam Atma, the ultimate awareness that is the self of everything, begins to disentangle itself from the thoughts and images and concepts that contract it. You start by becoming aware of awareness, even in the midst of contraction, in meditation and out of meditation. So this is your homework. This is your practice. Be aware of your awareness. Meditate on awareness. Closed-eyed and open-eyed, whenever awareness comes up to remind you to notice it. And now I'm not going to ask you to accept the belief that your awareness is God's awareness. I am going to ask you to hold it provisionally, to allow yourself to contemplate the really extraordinarily inspiring possibility that the most fundamental quality in your aliveness is also the expression of absolute divinity, that you are that, that in being awareness, you are also being the divine, that you are also being the source, that you are also being that which gives rise to everything. There are lots of implications to this recognition, and I know that in your contemplation, you'll discover them. But it all starts with your willingness to keep returning to awareness, to keep identifying with awareness, to keep being present with that presence that is living your life. So you'll be getting a homework assignment tomorrow. This talk will be available as an MP3 tomorrow. I do encourage you to bring questions to the listserv. We'll be having questions next week. But please write down the questions and the insights that you have and share them with us on the listserv, which you'll be receiving the link to in the morning. And again, thank you so much for being with us, for being willing to do this exploration, and for being who and what you are. Namaste, Shiva. Namaste, Shakti. Appearing as each one of us, and as everyone and everything there is. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful day. and enjoy the unfolding that is taking place. Namaste.